Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's not really a huge adjustment. It just, you know, we'll turn on the lights and just work a little bit later and give the guys their morning. Coom, you're muted, buddy.
Okay, you got me?
I got you. There you go.
Technology's my friend, you know.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
None of us are perfect. And when we're in those vulnerable moments, you better believe The Score is going to take those moments and plaster them through the speakers of your radio. Hi, everyone. It's the final hour. Our opportunity to talk to the Coom Dog. Alongside Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Ron Coomer joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And by that little clip, you can tell the Coom Dog is spending a ton of time at the ballpark over the last couple of weeks. What have you learned? What's the big takeaway, other than learning how to unmute yourself and work the Zoom news conferences? What's your big takeaway from watching the Cubs over the last couple of weeks?
First of all, I really appreciate that little clip coming in. Of all the things, that's one of my highlights of my COVID-19 time. That is definitely one of them. I get muted by Peter when we do these Zoom calls. Peter Chase, our media relations guy with the Cubs. And I got muted, I unmuted, and then I got muted again. And I went, and I, you know, you can see it on the screen. And it's just, yeah, what are you going to do? It's a good thing David was one of my teammates and locker mates, so it really didn't matter. He's probably wanted to mute me before, so it was okay. You know what I learned? I learned that this club, as of right now, Zach, I'll tell you this. They are in a really good position to be successful, the position player guys on that side of the game. The offense and the defense, as far as the guys on the field, I really look at them and I go, wow, they really did a great job of being prepared to get started. I look at the swings, I look at BP, I look at how tight the defense is looking with all the work, and I'm like, these guys took it serious during this time, and they've done a very good job of preparation, and I think the starting pitchers have done the same. I don't know about the bullpen guys, and it's only because you don't get to see them much, right? So I'm not dishing on them by no means. You just don't get to see them. But for the starters to be able to come in and already, like tonight, now I'm going to go to this game, and for them tonight to be able to throw four or five innings possibly, that tells me that they spent those 3 months really preparing themselves to be ready whenever the bell was going to ring, and they're doing it. So that's pretty good.
Hey, Coom Dog, has anything began to feel normal?
Just that clip to start things off, Tommy.
Well, you know, the thing about it, you go to the, you protect yourself going to the baseball park. Then you get right. in the baseball park. Is it normal baseball to you? Or are you always conscious of something? You know, like I was reading this thing the other day. One of the baseball players said, "You don't want us to spit. Spitting is like blinking to us."
Right.
So the normalcy, anything about it?
Yeah, there's some. I mean, once I sit in our booth, and I'm been in there by myself, and you're in the booth, and you're listening to the crack of the bat, and you're watching guys take ground balls, it would be, you know, like a normal day when Zach would be sitting right behind me. He'd be prepping for his pregame show, and I'd be doing my book, and I'd just be watching, you know, the ins and outs of what we do on a daily basis and batting practice and doing our defensive work and that. So once I get into that spot, I feel normal. The windows are open. Wrigley's going. But other than that, the second you leave the booth and walk out to the hallway, it's a totally different ballgame again. Everybody is masked up. And the other thing about it, too, is just the lack of people that are in Wrigley Field is so bizarre. There's no security people. There's obviously no fans. But, I mean, there's nobody in there. There's a few front office people, whether it be the baseball operations side watching, some of the guys that are, you know, monitoring by computer on how some of the things are going, or just, you know, just baseball front office, but very few of them. And then there is nobody else in the stadium, and it is really bizarre because usually the ballpark is kind of bustling, even if, you know, the fans haven't been let in yet. And you really feel the effects of getting tested walking into the ballpark, you know, with your temperature test, and just everything that goes with it. You know, everybody wearing a mask, including the coaches on the field. The only guys that aren't are the players. And even, you know, I've seen KB take ground balls with a mask on because, you know, maybe he just forgot. I don't get to ask him, but there's some really bizarre things. But, you know, when guys are working out, you get a little feel of like, okay, we're back to baseball.
Are the sounds, you know, when we're all, you know, privileged of going to a professional sporting event and you hear the stadium fills up and the anticipation of the game and from practicing the national anthem to the drum corps coming onto the field, what are the sounds of the game from your booth? Is it a completely different game, or is the sounds of the game without the assistance of the crowd and the hustle and bustle of the stadium, is it still the same sounds of baseball?
Somewhat. We've been experimenting at Wrigley Field, and I say we because all of us being there, they're experimenting with piping in fan noise and just crowd noise, along with, you know, organ noise and things like that. They tried the other day, you know, the Javi chant as he comes to home plate with a couple men on, and I don't think that went over real well, the Javi chant, you know, piping that in. But I think some of the fan noise was good. They're playing walk-up music. Some of that sounds good, but when there's nothing being piped into the stadium, the ballpark has like a hollow sound to it. You know, balls clanking off seats, and you just, you know, the way I can describe it is in the movie The Natural, when Robert Redford tries to get out of the hospital and he goes to the ballpark to see if he can play, and they throw him a few balls and he hits, and the reporter is in the outfield and he hits a ball and you hear it clanking around. That's what Wrigley Field sounds like right now. It sounds a little hollow, and, you know, it's very odd to be in a great ballpark and a kind of a sports cathedral like Wrigley Field with nothing going on around it. Even the neighborhood is kind of dead.
Yeah, I think that'll change slightly when the Cubs get underway for real on July 24th
yep.
against Milwaukee. There might be a little bit of a hint of it. A week from today, Coom, first exhibition game. Baseball returns to the score. You and Pat will have the call, Cubs, White Sox at Wrigley Field. That'll be the first time that we get an opportunity to experience what this new type of baseball is going to be like in this climate.
Yeah, it'll be different. And oh, by the way, you're part of that crew, and you better have your A game going. There's no excuses here in this Cubs radio booth. So just make sure you're game on and ready to go. You know, this Sunday warm-up that we've been doing for the last 3 months, the three of us, you better be ready to go, pal. just so you know. But it will be different, Zach, and you know, we have a lot of fun in our booth, but it's going to be different calling games off monitors and things like that. But, you know, once we get down to calling the game, Pat is, if he's not the best in baseball, I'd like to work next to the guy that was, because I don't know if you could get any better than what Pat does in our booth as our play-by-play guy. He's phenomenal, and he's a buddy, you know, and all of those things. And you and I get to work together, you know, with your show as a pregame and then in-game. So it's going to be fun, and I just look forward to it, to be honest with you. But it'll be a little different, but we're going to make it work, and we're going to bring something good to our fans, and so will the Cubs.
Hey, Coom, as a broadcaster or as a player, do they or you need the emotional attachment of the crowd sound that it gives you? Or can players somehow manifest that type of excitement just from the dugout and the, you know, the peers they have on their side of the field?
Tommy, that's a great question. I fight this. I've been asked this numerous times, and I'm sure you have too, right? Being an ex-player and then thinking you're going to go into a Sunday. Could you imagine playing Green Bay, or for us playing the Cardinals, and there not be a fan in the stands, and there's nothing, you know, you walk out there and there's no cheering when Riz comes out or KB or Javi, and, you know, Molina goes out there, no one's booing him at Wrigley Field. I just can't even imagine that, right? You really can't. And I think there are going to be players that are going to be better because there's no fans, and I think they would be better with less distraction around them, and they don't let that fan thing and the adrenaline of the game affect them negatively. And then I think for me, when I was playing, that would have been detrimental for me not having fans, because I kind of thrived off the adrenaline rush of what we did. You know, that 20 minutes before game time when the fans start piling in to the stadium and there's an energy, whether it's home or away, you still fed off that feeling. And I love that whole idea. So it's going to be difficult for some guys, and I think for others, it's probably going to be better.
Hey, Coom, when you get hit by a pitch, do you let out a scream if it is one of those pitches that hits you and hurt? Because to me, all right, I'm thinking of a player getting hurt or hit by a pitch, and you can almost hear the reaction from him, because when you hear it in a normal game and you have a crowd and a player gets hurt, it's almost like the crowd reaction takes over the sound and you don't hear the player. So, you know, I was, you know, really, you know, the sound, you're going to be able to hear the pitch hitting the player, but we're also going to be able to hear the reaction of a player.
And that's where we could have some issues. I mean, if you got crowd mics and there's no crowd and you get hit with a 95 mile an hour heater right between your numbers in the back, there's going to be words that are thrown out there that you don't want a 10-year-old hearing from your favorite athlete, I'll promise you. And I would have been right in the middle of that pack of being that guy. I don't know how else to describe it. It's going to be one of them things where you're going to, you know, hopefully you're going to be able to pause, or, you know, that 5-second delay. I don't know how it's going to work, but you're going to hear things that you really weren't accustomed to hearing because of the crowd noise, being able to kind of muffle it. And I think that's a good thing. But, you know, human nature, you get hit. You know, you were just talking to Jared about plays, and you were talking about his dad blowing up a linebacker blitzing who was going right past you. The sound of that, and then the sound of what that guy was saying as he was, as you said, getting the back of his jersey dirty. You know, there's words that come out that they just come out. I don't know how else to describe it, and that's what we're going to hear baseball at times.
And that one specific play, it had the right decision, and I heard Walter hit him, and I heard the energy and the air leave the guy as Walter was lighting him up. But then when I turned around and looked to make sure everything was good, Walter was so excited about what he did that he was, like, elevating, you know, his excitement because it was such a dominant hit.
And that probably wasn't a PG conversation, I wouldn't think.
No, not at all.
No. that's my play. I'm like, I don't know.
Well, thankfully, as you said earlier, we've got the best play-by-play man in the game in the booth, and it will be up to Pat to navigate us through some words that
you're dang right, because I'm not going to say anything. That's That's why he gets the big bucks, bro.
Yes, exactly. I've got to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to get both of you guys on this, being former players. Your reaction to the decision that Michael Kopech made on the south side. Granted, we don't have all the information, but just the delicate nature of everything in these uncertain and definitely unique times.
Z, I got one other thing, too. Oh. Tommy brought up a great friend of mine from that lives now in Dallas who is a Lockport player. So we got to bring that up, too, because I got to hear some stories about a friend of mine, Jody O'Donnell, who is a Lockport Porter football player that went to Wisconsin. So we got to get that in this hour, too.
Yes, we will go back to the neighborhood as well. Tom Thayer is here. So is Ron Coomer. I'm Zach Zaveman. The fun hour here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We support Michael, and we support all the guys that are opting out. That's a personal choice, and they have that right. And we wish them all the best. We wish Michael the best, and we hope that, whenever he does come back, he's ready to go. But for right now, Michael did what's right, what's best for Michael. And, I support him fully and 100% in that way.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
That was White Sox reliever Aaron Bummer yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, talking about the young, hard-throwing Michael Kopech, who has elected to sit out the 2020 season. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Ron Coomer is with us for the entire hour here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We'll get to the serious side about the Michael Kopech decision in a bit here. But before we took the commercial break, Coom piqued my interest because he's going to take us back into the neighborhood. Once again, you guys have friends and stories that connect that you didn't even know.
Z, they decided to put Tommy and I on the air together, and that's a Mitch Rosen problem. Mitch did that that day. When he called us and said he wanted all of us to be on the air, we grew up a driver nine iron from each other. And, when you're athletes in a small part of our, southwest side, we overlap. Well, Tommy, did not know that I'm friends, really good friends, with a guy named Jody O'Donnell, who was an All-American football player, went to Lockport and went to Wisconsin and played against Tommy. And obviously Tommy went on to go to Notre Dame. Jody went to Wisconsin, and Jody and I have been friends, and we, we get on each other hard, Jody and I. But when Tommy started talking about Jody, I'm getting ready to go to the ballpark right before I come on with you guys. I almost fell over. I'm like, he's not talking about my friend. Can't be. Jody was a great player. He's a great businessman, but I just started laughing, so I text Jody. But Tommy, I got to know about Jody because he talks a good game, and now he lives in Dallas where everything's bigger and better, and I hear all that crap all the time. So I need to hear about him playing football. When you said he was a great player, I got to listen to that crap some more. That's the problem.
Yeah, Coom, that dude, he was legit, because, Bill Zimmer, Mike Zimmer's father, was the coach of Lockport at the time. And I think Gordy Gillespie and Bill Zimmer, they admired each other, but they disliked each other because Bill Zimmer was probably one of the better coaches in the area along with Gordy Gillespie. So he would always have talented football teams, but, Joliet Catholic, we kind of drew in talent because there's a ton of Lockport guys I played with at Joliet Catholic. The Piazza brother, Joey Kamaroskis, the Pezzaveno brothers, the Carberry brothers, Dini Morelli, Pat Lynn, Mike Proviance, Matt Simo, all these
guys. All right, enough already, okay?
That's
why you kicked our butts year after year after year. No wonder Jody didn't like you guys.
But you know what? Jody and I, we became good friends because I had all these other Lockport acquaintances, and we hung out but I really admired the player he was because from our freshman year to our senior year, he was the best football player there. He was a great middle linebacker. He was, like I was telling Zach, when I was a kid and I saw the personality of Boz O'Brien developing, I thought of Jody O'Donnell because he was the big kid that had early facial hair, that had the haircut with the long back, the mullet. He had the mullet. And then he continued to develop, and he became a legitimate Division I 4- or 5-star athlete, went on to University of Wisconsin, and I think he was playing meaningful starting his freshman year. So, you know, there's a couple of guys that kind of stand out throughout your career, because, you know, at Joliet Catholic, we had a lot of success, and we only lost once in the 4 years I was on in high school on the varsity level. But
that's just ridiculous to even say that, right?
But you know, Jody was that guy that he'd play Joliet Catholic and he'd have 25 tackles. He'd be all over the field. He was playing every down, offense and defense. So, like I said, you know, Coombe, and it's funny that you sent me a message that you know Jody also. He's a guy that, you know, 20, 30, 40 years after the fact, when they said, all right, who's the best player in high school, you immediately go to Jody.
Yeah, he played in the USFL, and then I know he had a major shoulder injury. I always mess with him. Yes. Like, well, you got another one. You're not throwing, and that would be my way of combating that, you know, and talking to him. But he did, and he still, you know, has issues with it, but you know, he's gone on to be a great businessman and a great friend, you know, through Coach Hall, through Jimmy Hall. Yes. That's how Jody and I connected. Well. And you and I, too, and your family. I get brought to your family's restaurant by Jimmy. And that's how I got connected to your family, because I was a little bit younger than you guys. But, yeah, so all of our acquaintances. And off the air, we can talk about Jody some more. I got to get some more dirt on O'Donnell. But, yeah, but it was good. It was great for you to say that name. I started laughing, and I'm like, oh, now I got to hear this again. That'll be good.
you could go over to Uncle Richie's, and you could probably dig up some dirt on Jody O'Donnell and his crew back then.
There is no doubt about that. I've been there for some of that, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Ron Cooper's with us for the entire hour here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So we started the segment with that soundbite from Aaron Bummer, the White Sox reliever, talking about his teammate Michael Kopech, 24 years old, missed all of last season recovering from Tommy John surgery, but was expected to have a role with the 2020 White Sox before he elected to opt out, which is allowed this year because of the climate that we're in with the coronavirus, although the White Sox say he's healthy. And interestingly enough, Don Cooper, the White Sox pitching coach, in an interview with the Chicago Sun-Times said, quote, I don't know what's going on with Michael, but I know he deals with some anxiety and depression. And my thought is, I sure hope he's okay. And I hope he gets to where he needs to be, where he's feeling good and wants to come back, because we will welcome him back with open arms. And that's a delicate thing that we don't often talk about in professional sports, but the psychological part of the game, and life, it plays such a big role in the success of a person on the field of play and off the field, Coombe.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And Don Cooper, one of the best. I played for Don in winter ball in Venezuela, in Puerto La Cruz, Venezuela. He was our pitching coach for that team and just a great guy. A couple years later, he got to the big leagues as a pitching coach. And, you know, obviously everybody knows his story. He is stuck as the pitching coach for the White Sox through
Wait. And I know there's a very serious side to the Kopech story, and we'll get to that again. I'm going to hit pause on the Kopech story. You and Coop, Venezuela.
And what's your point?
Let us know what you have to fill in the rest of this.
Well, I was a double-A baseball player in the White Sox organization, and I ended up getting invited. I was the only double-A player to get invited to. No, I take that back. There's one other guy from our organization that got invited to play winter ball, which is, back then it was really kind of, you'd go to Mexico, but Venezuela and Puerto Rico were the two places. And if you went there and succeeded, you were really, you know, you were, you know, one minor injury away or some little something away from just an opportunity of being in the big league. So I got a chance to go to winter ball. I took it, went to Venezuela. And
it was different then than it is today.
Oh, not very much so. Yes. Yeah. It wasn't nearly as bad. It was still crazy as could be. I mean, you got 18-year-olds standing with machine guns protecting the field, and people are betting on every pitch. And when you threw the ball to the mound at the end of the inning, you'd hear a roar if the ball stayed on the dirt or it went under the grass, because everybody was betting on that. And if you struck out, you know, half of your fans loved you and hated you. But I did one thing that was really good for my time in Venezuela, and that is I hit a game-winning home run in game one of our at home. So our very first game, I hit a game winner. And so then I was in with the hometown fans. So that was very crucial to me being liked in Puerto La Cruz, Venezuela. But we had a great time. We had a good team. Tony Armas was on our team back then. He was the owner of the team. And Don Cooper, you knew right away the way Coop handled everything from the Latin players that were homegrown there to the Americans that went over. He was just a great pitching coach and a great guy. And I have a ton of respect for Don Cooper. But we did have a little bit of fun there too, Zach. I have to admit.
Well, Coom, when you consider what Michael Kopech's living through, you know, I've been a part of this with other guys on the football team that I played with, and then you saw anxiety, depression, how it affected their life, their preparation, and you only wish them to get help so their life is good. Sports is kind of thought of secondly. Is I got to imagine with all of Coop's experiences through life that he is probably the right person to evaluate Kopech's best possibilities to succeed.
Tommy, I absolutely, and I read this when it first came out, and I was rereading it again right as we were talking about it, and to me, in reading this article in the Sun Times, and I you know. It sounds to me, and I hate playing psychologist or anything, but it sounds to me like Coop is reaching out to him and inviting him back, whether he plays this year or not, but inviting him back into the fold of the group to be that stabilizing force maybe in this young man's life. Because as you said, we've all had to deal with something in our career, Tommy, if you play long enough, on the mental side of it. Yeah, whether you have depression, anxiety. You got things at home that are bad or things that are issues. Don has seen it all in all these years that he's been a pitching coach. And it just sounds to me like he's reaching out. And I know the White Sox and Herm Snyder and their training staff and all their people over there are outstanding. And, you know, you really hope for this young kid because he's a supreme talent in our game. And you just want him to be able to reach out and find whatever he's going to need so he can get back on the field and do something that I know from listening to him that he loves to do. The other thing about this kid that I've heard, and I've not met him, but everybody talks glowingly about the person that he is. So, you know, our game can use all of those people that we can get, like every sport. When you get great people, you want them to be a part, and, you know, you just hope the best for them.
You know, Coombs, too, is for me through college and through the pros, I've come across players that there's been huge expectations thrust upon them, either from family where they come from at different ways, and it's tough for them to live up to the expectations. And everything that we've ever heard about this young man is that the expectations are out the roof. You know, triple digits, you know, and his ability to throw the ball. Have you ever seen guys that have a tough time living up to the expectations, not only the life of a professional athlete, but what's expected of them from their teammates and all the other people surrounding them?
I did, and he ended up being a teammate of mine later in our career with the Cubs. But it was Todd Van Poppel, who is a kid that was out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I know he's from Texas. I'm almost sure he was from Dallas. And Todd was this high school kid that was touted as being the next Nolan Ryan and all of these things, and he was the first pick in the draft by Oakland, and I was with Oakland, but I was going to AAA, and he had just signed, and he was a young kid, and they really protected his arm and protected him, and anytime he would throw, and, you know, you'd get a couple men on out of the game, he'd come, and I just thought they did a disservice to him by not allowing him some failures when he was a young kid just starting to pitch professionally in the minor leagues. But As Todd got older and worked his way to the big leagues because he failed at the beginning and then became a very good bullpen guy, never did live up to what everybody thought he should have. But with that being said, he worked his way back and became a very good bullpen pitcher and had a nice career in the big leagues. And to me, that would be extremely difficult to have that, your hometown, your family, your friends, the organization, everything is kind of dumped on your shoulders as a 17 or 18 year old kid. That's an awful lot for someone to carry who might not have the tools around them to be able to carry that. And, you know, and that could be very well the case for Kopech too. And you just hope that, you know, with all that is given to players in Major League Baseball now with support, hopefully he can find it if that's what he needs.
Van Poppel was born in Hinsdale, but you're right, grew up in Arlington, Texas, right outside of Dallas. He was 11-3 with a 0.97 yep. ERA, 170 strikeouts as a senior at Martin High School in Arlington. The Atlanta Braves considered in 1990 using the first overall pick to take Van Poppel, but he told them he would not sign with them. So the Braves ended up drafting a guy by the name of Larry Jones. You know him better as Chipper. Worked out for them, and Van Poppel did go on to have a long major league career. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, more with the Coombe Dog on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Pleased to be joined by Ron Coomer until the top of the hour here on The Score. Coombe will be at Wrigley Field later on tonight. John Lester gets the ball in another Cubs intra-squad game a week from today right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, Cubs baseball returns, the first of three exhibitions as the Cubs host the White Sox at Wrigley Field. So I don't know, Coombe, if you saw this, but because the Dodgers are undermanned to a certain degree, they've been using one of their clubhouse attendants, they call them clubbies in Major League Baseball, yeah, out in left field. And Chris Taylor tried to stretch a single into a double, and he was thrown out by the clubbie. Now, what kind of treatment? I know there has to be some social distancing, and you can't do it the way you did in the old days, but what kind of treatment do you think Chris Taylor has been getting since he was thrown out by a clubbie?
You know what I would have done? I would have had all of his stuff removed from the locker, his nameplate taken off and put it by the washing machines and all that, and then I'd have taken and made one for the clubbie and put that in Taylor's locker and hung stuff and had his name on the back of the jersey. Now that's what they should do to Taylor and have him doing some laundry. That would be great.
That's awesome.
Well, isn't that a little bit of preservation? You know, we talked about that, you know, Coombe, about, you know, the early stretching a single into a double, no matter who the outfield arms are. I think you're paying more attention to what you're doing to your hamstring than you are who's throwing it to second.
Real hits, no doubt. I know the other day there was a ball hit, and Almora was flying to first, and, you know, it was going to be a bang-bang play, and Rossi's yelling from the dugout, easy, easy, don't get hurt. It's like day two that they're on the field. So, you know, what are you supposed to do? You're an athlete, especially a guy in competition for his position. You know, there's no taking the reins off a guy. He's gonna play however he thinks he's got to play to win a job from day one that you step on the field. But to get blown up by the clubbie, that's gonna be. Could you imagine putting one of your clubhouse guys, Tommy, out on the field with you guys, and him just take a guy down like that? What would happen today? He'd have to leave the team, wouldn't he, in football?
Yeah, I don't think you'd be really. it'd be one of those things where they'd empty your locker, put all his stuff in the shower, and
totally,
you know, fill that spot with who's ever made the play. Hey,
oh,
Coombs, you know, when you think of an inter-squad game, or you think of the game against the White Sox next week, is there a different level of, you know, I don't know, commitment to the process, or is everything done, you know, 100% there? You know, in football, I guess if you go out to practice against your teammates, you can go out there and practice at a 75-80% pace to get your work done. When you go out into the game, man, it's live. It's serious. You're going to have some ugly moments of contact. Is there a difference between inner squad and a preseason game against a different opponent?
Yeah, there is. There's no doubt. You're going to ramp up. I mean, just to be able to look across the field and see somebody in a different uniform than yours is going to help. And then on top of it, you throw the White Sox into that group, and then that even makes it that much better for everybody, for them and for the Cubs. You know, I think it's important that they get some of these games in, and I couldn't think of a better team to do that against than the White Sox to get yourself two things. One, Tommy, one, to get just seeing another team and getting a little of that adrenaline rush. And two, you know, you're playing against a group that, you know, you're fighting in town for who's the supreme group, you know, and all of those things. And so to do that with no fans in the stands, I think it's going to be important for both teams to get a little taste of what that's like to having a ramped up game against an opponent, but doing it in a setting where there's no fans. So I think that'll be very good for both teams. And I know when we got to spring training in those last couple days before games started, I was so sick of facing my own pitchers. I just wouldn't even swing. I just would stand in the batter's box and I was like, I'm out. I'm waiting now till we play Toronto or Boston or somebody else in 2 days. And I would just stand there and take pitches and get timing that way. But I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And there was just nothing there. I would do my defensive work as hard as I could do it at game speed, and I would do it for a much longer period of time my last few days before the game started. But offensively, that adrenaline of standing in the batter's box, those last couple days of camp before the game started, I just didn't have it to face our pitchers. So I would just take pitches, and then I would get ready for the Red Sox or whoever we were going to play.
You know, there is some common ground between football preseason and baseball preseason, because that's the one complaint you hear from players. I'm so sick of hitting our own guys. We need to see somebody else. So when you have that, do you I forgot the end of my question there. It was really meaningful. But, you know, it's more of the, you know, preparation against your own guys, and then you talk about, you know, playing against other guys. I mean, is there a different motivation to it? Are coaches, like, I know coaches in the NFL, they're reluctant to give away any information during the preseason. Is there information that baseball managers, coaches, players are reluctant to give away in a preseason atmosphere like that?
You'll not see the guys. There'll be no real major pickoff plays. You won't run any kind of bunt play other than just there's usually three or four different plays that you run on a bunt defense. If you have some kind of trick play, obviously you won't run that. You'll just run a standard bunt play. The guys that are stealing bases, you may do it occasionally, but if you got a guy who you're thinking you may do that with during the year, you're not going to do that against the White Sox in these inter-squad games. That's not going to happen. And then the real test is like the pitchers facing the hitters. The pitchers are not going to go with their best stuff. Let's say they're out pitched. They'd rather give up a base hit in this game than show a pitch. Let's say their split finger if you're Darvish, this new pitch he's throwing. Or for Lester, you know, against a righty, throwing a backdoor cutter is like the last year and a half or so, that's been a great pitch that he's come up with instead of pounding it inside. You're not going to see him do that. He's going to be more very conventional in the way he pitches. And that, to me, like the football, where you stay with real straightforward plays, whether it be offense or defense, I think same thing in baseball.
For preseason baseball, do you guys have a video exchange? So the other teams that you're going to play, will they get a chance to look at the game between the Cubs and the Sox? Or is that not information you provide each other?
Yeah, there's no video exchange at all. With teams. Now, with that being said, every game is televised and every ballpark gets every game. So if you want that information, the video teams now for every ball club, I'm sure just like football, there's so much information. Anything you would want, you have on the opposing players. I just go in the clubhouse now, and Zach and I are always together on that first bus, and we'll go in there, and I'll stand behind like Mike Borzello, and he'll be watching the opposing hitters or watching our guy throw. And, you know, I could just stand back there. You don't have to bother them or anything because they're usually in the clubhouse doing it. And you can get an idea of what they're going to try to do that night. Or, you know, Mike was my coach in New York, or the hitting coaches. And you ask, okay, what has this guy got? And they'll have film on him right there in the clubhouse of the starting pitcher that night. And it's, you know, some of the things that they can break down with film. I wish I had when I was a player. But, boy, now you get so much good information to go into a game. So every team has everything at their fingertips that you'd want. You really don't need to go to the other ball club and get their info. There's no exchange because everything's on TV and everybody's clipping everything of the opposing team.
All right. Did you see Luis Robert yesterday where he got fooled on a pitch, falls to the ground, makes contact, and jacks the ball out of the yard?
I did. That was very different. I have not seen that before. I have hit a home run in Fenway Park against Tim Wakefield on a curveball, not a knuckleball, that it was going to hit me. And I didn't want to get hit because he threw so slow with the knuckleball. He threw me a curve. And so I took a big rip at it. And I didn't fall to the ground like he did, but I stumbled back because I was stepping almost out of the batter's box behind me to hit. It was like a softball game, you know, and right. I hit one into the net over the Green Monster, but I've never hit a ball to straightaway center field, 420 feet, fell down, didn't even see the ball land, the kid, and it's a home run. That's, you know, that's some real talent, Zach. I tell you, I have not seen that before. That was pretty good.
Hey, Akum, we heard some player comparison to this young guy.
Yep.
Do you have any player comparison maybe that you played with during your time?
Well, it's tough to say because he hasn't really had much time in the big leagues yet. And to me, to compare guys to a big league player, you know, Tommy, I'm always the guy that says, let's see how he does in the league. Can he stay healthy and those things? But skill level and strength, this is a name that's going to go back some years. But how about a guy like Bobby Bonds, who could do it all? Great athlete, run, hit, throw, do the whole thing, and play in the middle of the diamond in center field.
Interesting, because yesterday we were on with Stoney on Inside the Clubhouse, and Kumi, I asked him the same question. He compared him to Andre Dawson.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you know, the five tools and all of them are really good. Yeah.
Man, there's a lot to like down there on the south side. There's a lot to like on the north side, and you'll hear both those teams take each other on next week right here on The Score. It's been a blast. Coom, thank you so much for joining us for another fun hour. For Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman. Want to say a special thank you to our executive producers, Sean Anderson and Mike Chen, and you out there listening to us today. Stay safe. Cubs baseball returns to The Score a week from today on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Oh, man. They mad at me, bro. I'm gone. Just got the text. Exposing too much. Gotta go. My bad.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.